All right, at this time, the chairperson will briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Saturday speaker meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. And my name is Christine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Christine.
And I love saying that. The gratitude that fills up in me when I can say that I'm an alcoholic and I'm alive today and I'm here with you guys. And, you know, and I've been sober more than a year. And Central is my home group. I've been to a few group conscious meetings. And after you go to a few, either you don't want to go back to any more or you want to go back more because you have great suggestions. But anyways, I drank and I did a lot of other things that were not healthy to myself or people around me, and I almost died. And my family is a family of alcoholics and addicts, and I had the choice to die or to come here, and I'm truly blessed. I don't think I'd have another shot of sobriety, so I'm going to try to stick around as long as I can. And thank you for being my family.
Amen.
Okay. The group would like me to remind you to please make sure that your cell phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. I'm going to now introduce our beautiful speaker, Kelly B. I met Kelly, we probably ran into each other more than a year ago, but we started hanging out and talking probably at about, I don't know, maybe 9-10 months ago, and she is an awesome, awesome person, and she does this, and she has a life, and she has a husband, and she's having a family, and, you know, and she does what she needs to do to, you know, to just do this. It's, you know, this is it right here. It's 12 steps and our 12 traditions, and, you know, some of us, it's not so easy, and I pray for those people, but Kelly's, you know, we just do it one day at a time with each other. You know, this is, we have a common defect of alcoholism, and I'm truly blessed that I'm an alcoholic. I wouldn't know how to live life without that, and I, you know, Kelly's just, she's been there for me, and she's one of my besties here, and I love her, and I give you Kelly.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. I am so nervous, so please forgive me. I also would like to say that I'm pregnant, and so if I, you may have already noticed, but if I happen to belch, trip, swear, any other weird bodily functions, I'm going to just totally blame it on this guy over here. My sobriety date is February 18th of 2009. I didn't expect a clap for that. So I figured I'd start out just kind of by talking about, you know, family and how I got here and then how I've stayed in for the short period of time that I've been in. I grew up in I think it was like a June Cleaver type family. My parents were amazing, and I wasn't around alcohol ever. If my parents drank, it was a glass of wine for my mom at night, and my dad maybe drank once a month. If we went out to dinner or something, he'd have a margarita, and that's it. And and they didn't have people over to the house a lot, so it wasn't around parties or anything like that. I actually went to a Baptist high school, so it was not cool to drink. It was not cool to have premarital sex or swear or smoke or do drugs. And I didn't do any of those things in high school. I actually later found out that my both of my grandfathers were alcoholics. I knew one of my grandfathers had committed suicide before I was born, and he did that while he was drunk. And my other grandfather quit drinking before I was born as well. I just never, you know, it wasn't a story that they really talked about. I happened to have three brothers. Two are half-brothers because my parents were both married before they married each other. And so one full brother. And all of us siblings are alcoholics, which is really kind of interesting. I'm unfortunately the only one that's in recovery right now. My younger brother, the one that I grew up with, he's kind of mentioned to me a few times, like, he's interested and he knows that he's an alcoholic. He admits that he's an alcoholic. And I'm always trying to be supportive of, hey, you know, if you ever want to go to a meeting, I'll be happy to take you. The one time that he finally took me up on that was like a week after I'd had a tonsillectomy. And they put me on some kind of medication that made me sick to my stomach, unfortunately. And I was really, really, I don't know if anybody has had a tonsillectomy as an adult, but it's a pretty hardcore surgery. And I'm laid up in the bed, and my brother says, hey, Kelly, are you going to an AA meeting tonight? And I'm like, yes, as a matter of fact, I was. So I took him, and I ended up getting sick during the meeting, which was really awesome. And then my brother, after the meeting, I said, how did it go? What did you think? And he said, I just felt like drinking the whole time I was in there. So I think, you know, that just, if you're not ready for it, you're not ready for it. When I got to college, I had about a quarter before I started drinking. We were on a quarter system rather than the semester system. And I had started to drink into, I think, the beginning of my second quarter, but only had probably drank about three or four times, and not alcoholically. I had one or two drinks, and that was it. I was fine, went home. And then I was raped, and I agonized over mentioning that here, but it's really a big, big part of my story. And it was, you know, I don't think that's the reason that I became an alcoholic, but that made me an alcoholic a lot faster. And it actually, I think, is a blessing because, you know, I was able to get into the program a lot younger because my drinking was really sped up. I drank alcoholically from that point forward. And I was not, at the time that I came in, I was not a daily drinker. I luckily went to Georgia Tech for undergrad, which is supposed to be the second worst party school just above Brigham Young. So I don't know how people at like University of Florida or of any of those schools do it, because I mean, we still had lots of parties, so it must have been really crazy at other schools. Just barely made it through college. And you know, at the time that I was in college, I really didn't think that I was an alcoholic at all, because everybody else drank the same way that I did. You know, everybody drank to get drunk in college, as far as I saw, and I was no different. When I graduated from college, I started to notice that not everybody got quite as drunk as I did, and not everybody drank as many drinks as I did. So I started realizing that there was a problem with my drinking. I, for a lot of years, I thought, you know, I just had this psychological problem that wasn't really a drinking problem. And if I could get over my psychological issues, then I could get over my drinking issues. But that never really seemed to change anything. Going to therapy or getting on different medications, that never seemed to change my drinking issue. I remember one time, I wanted to share this with you because it's kind of funny. I was in college one time, and we went out, my roommate and I went out to a club, we were dancing, and I remember when we were walking back to the car, I had a limp, I was like, and I was like, oh my gosh, what did I do to my leg? My leg must be hurt. And my leg didn't hurt, but I was limping, so I figured that I hurt my leg. And when I got up the next day, I realized I had these big, like, clog-like shoes on. And the heel had broken off of the clog. And that's why I was limping, but I thought that I'd hurt my leg. Good thing I wasn't driving that night. I got my first DUI when I was in college, and I was 21. I was at a drag show in Athens, Georgia, was coming back to Atlanta, and got pulled over. I told the cop, you know, please don't do this to me. I'm in college. It's going to ruin my life. And he was like, "I'm sorry, ma'am, you were driving on the wrong side of the road." I kind of blew that off too. Everybody, I had a bunch of friends in college that got DUIs. It didn't seem like that big of a deal. Started trying to do everything that it talks about in the big book about how, you know, you try to stop drinking or curtail your drinking through relocating, through cutting back. I tried to limit myself to 5 drinks. I tried to switch to beer or switch to wine, or stop drinking liquor. All the rest of the things I think that are in the big book pretty much I tried, and none of those worked for me. I got to the point where, you know, every single time I drank, regrets the next day. Every single time. Blackout most times, regrets definitely. And I went up to Savannah. I had met this boy who was definitely bad news, but met him at my friend's wedding, went up to Savannah to visit him. We went out on his boat fishing. He was like a charter fisher person. And, you know, of course, when you're fishing, you have to drink. And so we were drinking all day. When we got back off the boat, I wanted to still go out. I wasn't done. And he did not want to. So I went out by myself. And I don't remember. And I went. To, remember going to a bar. I don't remember anything after that until I got to jail, and there was some big lady trying to steal my jewelry. Apparently, you can't wear your jewelry in the jail cell. So I thought she was trying to steal my jewelry. I was not a very nice person when I drank. I apparently had ran my car about 100 yards into the marsh in Savannah, and I had no recollection of it. That's where my car, of course, was parked whenever the cops saw me out there. And the marsh in Savannah, as you can probably imagine, is pretty gross. It's filled with hermit crabs and alligators and all kinds of crazy stuff. I was covered in mud when I went to the jail cell. I somehow picked up, I guess they give you like plastic shoes or something to wear, and I don't know why, I'm imagining you, they don't want you to hang yourself with your shoelaces or something. I picked up 2 left shoes. besides the lady stealing my jewelry, the next thing that I remember was I was in the cell by myself, handcuffed, and there was nobody around, and there was no way to talk to anybody, and I had to use the restroom, and so I peed myself. After that, I was taken into a cell with some other women who, one was a crack addict, and one was a prostitute, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm covered in mud, I peed myself, I grew up in a really nice family, and I look like I'm the lowest of these 3 people. So I decided then that I was definitely going to kill myself as soon as I got out of jail. Well, not because I was the lowest of those 3 people, but just because of where my life had been. And I couldn't stop drinking, and there was no other solution for me. I didn't want to live life the way that it was. It was miserable. I hated myself, and I didn't know how to quit, so that was my only option. So I tried calling that boy that I went to see, and he would not bail me out of jail, so I had to call my mom in Jacksonville, have my mom drive all the way up from Jacksonville to bail me out of jail. She got there, and she was nice enough to do it, and knowing that it was my second DUI, we went to go get my car, which miraculously started with as deep in that marsh as it was, and we drove back to Jacksonville, which is where I was living at the time, and, you know, I had not slept in about 2 days, so I just needed to crash, and then I was going to figure out a way that I was going to kill myself. I woke up the next day and went out to the car and went from the car back into the house through the garage, and there was this fiddler crab who had somehow made it from the marsh to the car impound lot to Jacksonville from Savannah and had gotten out of my car and crawled about 20 to 30 feet to the point where the garage, there was a little step from where you park your car to where you go inside the house, and he died there. And somehow that made me realize, like, holy cow, there is some reason why I didn't kill somebody and I didn't kill myself. And, you know, I knew that there was, I knew that God was looking out for me somehow, and I needed to try one last thing, which I knew was AA. I just had never tried it before. I have the little fiddler crab here with me.
Aww.
The real one. I got him encased in resin, but instead of passing out a disgusting dead fiddler crab, I figured you guys can see him after the meeting if you want. So I went to, my mom took me to an AA meeting that night. I remember I'd taken a shower by then, but I still somehow had mud on me, and my mom was like, is that what you're wearing? And I was like, yes, that's what I'm going to wear. I was, you know, clearly really beaten down and crying the whole meeting, but it was the first time that I had heard people talk who sounded like they understood what I was going through. I had never had this experience before. In the bar, you don't really talk about, hey, you know, I'm having a problem not drinking with people, I guess. And it was amazing to me. And then I could tell there were people who had been sober for periods of time. You know, the longest that I had stayed sober was maybe 6 weeks, white knuckling it. I got to a point late in my drinking where I knew, you know, every single time I was going to not be able to do anything for probably at least a full day afterwards. So I was white knuckling it for 4 weeks just so that I could be kind of productive, and then I would go out and binge drink and waste a couple days. So I picked up a white chip that night. That was August 22nd of 2003. I got a sponsor a couple days later, a lady who had come up to me after that first meeting. I called her the next day, and I called her the day after and asked her to be my sponsor. I remember that third day I went, tried to go out to a meeting in Ponte Vedra, and on my way out there I got a flat tire, and I called AAA or whatever, and then called my sponsor, and I was really relaxed. Normally this kind of thing would really freak me out. I'd probably be crying. I have no idea how to change a tire. I know it's really pathetic, but I don't. And I thought, this must be what they're talking about when they say we'll know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. So my sponsor and I had a really amazing relationship. I was in grad school at the time, so I had a little bit more time. You know, I didn't have a 9-to-5 job. She wasn't working, so we got to spend a whole lot of time together, which was amazing. She was kind of like a mom to me. I tutored her son, and we started working the steps. The desire to drink was removed from me from that first day that I came into the program, which was unbelievable. Never looked back. First year in sobriety, I bought a house. I got an amazing job. I finished grad school. I ran a marathon. A couple years later, ended up getting married. All these amazing things were happening to me. But as you know, when I started talking, I told you my sobriety day is February 18th of 2009 and not 8/22/2003. And that's because about a year after I got sober, I had a little tiff with my sponsor. We mutually agreed to part ways. And because I had lost the desire to drink, I felt like I'd kind of not kicked this thing, but I was going to meetings and here I felt like I was hearing the same thing, which was how to not drink. I already had that down pat. I needed to know how to live. And part of the problem and why I wasn't hearing that was because my sponsor and I never finished working the steps. I got to about step 10, and then I think we stopped from there, or we discontinued our relationship. So I actually didn't really go to meetings for 4.5 more years, and somehow managed to not drink. I had a couple girlfriends who were really, really close friends of mine who were in the program, and those ladies, you know, we would meet regularly. We kind of felt like they were pseudo meetings. They were bridesmaids in my wedding. Those ladies ended up going back out, and I ended up going back out after about 5 years. And I want to share this part of my story with you because I just, you know, hopefully everybody has, it would be wonderful if we all just had one white chip, because it's so incredibly hard. It was so incredibly hard for me to come back in. It only took 3 months, thank God, before I came back in, but I could see the writing on the wall. Everything started, the same exact things started happening that were the reasons why I came into the program in the first place. Started missing work. Started doing reckless driving while I'm drunk, which I think if I got a third one, I probably wouldn't be able to drive again. The night that I went out, or went back out, it was my husband's birthday. We were driving to Orlando, and I knew that I was going to drink. I don't know what happened. I had never had the desire before that, but I just knew 100% that I was going to drink. I had a plan. When we got to Orlando, when we checked into our hotel, I was going to go get something out of the minibar while he was getting ready. I ended up telling my husband, I was going to try and hide it from him. I ended up telling my husband that night that I drank. And the next day, I remember I woke up and thought, hun, I'm just going to pretend that that didn't happen. I'm going to go back into the program tomorrow and, you know, not say anything, and we'll just pick up where I left off. Unfortunately, you know, that he was like, all right, if that's what you want to do. Sorry, I keep kicking the podium. So what led me to that drink? There was a lot of things. Of course, I ended my relationship with my sponsor. That was huge. I had a couple kind of pseudo-sponsors after that, but I never really got involved with another sponsor after that. I stopped going to meetings. That was huge. I had my two girlfriends that were in the program, but when they went back out, then I had no friends in the program anymore. So all of my core foundation was gone. I had, you know, no defense against that first drink. And the book says that one day that urge is going to happen. And to me, the program is all about building a foundation for, you know, a barrier between you and that first drink. So luckily, after 3 months, I was able to get my butt back into the meetings. And the first meeting that I went to, I just thought, okay, I've got to get another sponsor, I've got to pick up a white chip, and I have to do these things today. And otherwise, you know, I might decide to go back out again later on today or tomorrow. And so the meeting that I went to, I was waiting for God to tell me who was going to be my sponsor. And a woman spoke during the meeting who just sounded really profound. She seemed really centered. She had what I wanted. And I thought, that's the lady I'm going to ask to be my sponsor. And then 15 minutes before the meeting ended, she left. I'm like, dang it. I can't chase her out of the meeting. So after the meeting was over, I went up to the lady who was the chairperson of that meeting and said, you know, hi, I'm Kelly, and if you could help me find someone to be my temporary sponsor, or if you know of anybody who's looking to sponsor someone, I would really appreciate it. And she said, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. So that was really cool because we went and sat down in the Jacksonville Central group, which was where I was, that was my home group before I moved to Orlando. And it turns out that her sobriety date was August 22nd, which was my original sobriety date. She had been sober for more years than I had originally, but still, it was pretty strange that out of 365 days in a year, hers was the same as mine. It also turned out that the lady who left the meeting a little bit early was her sponsor. So that was really, really cool. I got back on track, and I started going to meetings again. I started working the steps again. I started meeting other women in the program. And, you know, the big difference, though, between Sobriety 1 for Kelly and Sobriety 2 for Kelly is that I didn't have the same experience with the desire to drink being removed from the first day that I came in, and that sucks. It's a real blessing to have that desire removed, because I now know how big of a blessing that was. You know, I obviously took it for granted the first time, and it's been work this time. I will say to you, if you're a newcomer, though, that if that desire is still there, the good news is that if you keep it simple and keep coming to meetings, get involved in the program. You don't have to do a lot in the beginning. You just need to get a sponsor, do what your sponsor says, and go to meetings, in my opinion. And, you know, slowly but surely that desire will be lessened. So that's where I am now is, you know, almost 3 years later. I still sometimes have the desire to drink. I'm an alcoholic. And luckily now, if that thought pops into my mind, I can say, okay, well, I've got all these friends, I've got the program, I've got all these things that I can go to before having to actually take a drink. What else is part of my story? Oh, I found out that, you know, the Cleaver family that I thought that I had, besides my parents or my grandparents being alcoholics, my dad, we find out a lot whenever your parents divorce, and my dad apparently was smoking pot every single day after he got home from work, which was like crazy to me, because my dad's kind of like Rush Limbaugh. He's like super conservative. Let's skip back to now in the program. So I worked through all of the steps with my Jacksonville sponsor, and then I had an opportunity to start a business here in Orlando with a colleague who worked with me at the big company that I was working with before I moved here. And it was really scary, because I was still in that first year of sobriety, and you're not supposed to make a whole lot of big changes in that first year. But I had my sponsor's blessing, and I had the blessing of my home group, and 10 months into my sobriety, moved to Orlando to start a business. And I got here, and I was still going to meetings, and but I wasn't really getting involved. I left meetings early. I wasn't really getting close to the women in the program. And I just kind of felt like, oh, okay, you know, I need to either do this or not do this, and not do it halfway. I was doing it halfway. So I prayed one day, you know, God, I think I need to get a new sponsor. I was still working with my Jacksonville sponsor. I prayed to God to please, you know, help me to find a new sponsor. And prayed right before a women's meeting that I went to 5 months ago. And it just so happens that it was the strangest thing, because in a lot of meetings, at the end of the meeting, we raise our hands and say who's available for sponsorship. Well, in this particular meeting, like before the meeting started, someone raised their hand and said, excuse me, I'd like to say that I'm looking for sponsees, so if anybody is looking for a sponsor, I was like, That was definitely a sign from God. So I asked this person to be my sponsor. She's been wonderful for me. She's helped me to grow my relationship with God, which I think, you know, is an area that I can always use improvement in. And I've been getting more involved in meeting other women in the Orlando area, which has definitely made it a more pleasant experience for me to go to AA meetings. When I was in the first time, they say go until you want to go, and I always wanted to go when I was in the first time. Unfortunately, it's not been the same for me this time. I don't ever want to come. I definitely didn't want to come tonight. Forget me. But I always enjoy it when I do come. It's difficult to get the car to drive over this way, but I still do enjoy it when I'm here. So the bottom line for me is, you know, my life is 100 times better than it was when I was out drinking. I hope to God that I never have to go back out, because I really felt like the first time that I came in, I had a blessing from God. You know, I was saved, and I didn't kill someone else, which I don't know if I could have made it through, you know, having killed someone else. And I felt like I was slapping God in the face when I went back out. Excuse me. I'm so thankful to be here. Even though I still have lows, my lowest lows in sobriety are still probably 10 times better than my best lows in being out. And I can honestly say that, you know, I really thought that I was going to commit suicide that time that I was in jail after that second DUI. I was 100% sure. And I have never even felt remotely close to that since I've been in the program. This program has been such a huge blessing to me, and I'm so thankful to have you guys, to have my sponsors, to have the program, because my grandfather who killed himself didn't, you know, I mean, the program was around at that time, but it wasn't as prevalent. People didn't know about it as much back then. And I know I'm ending a little bit early, but I think that it's, hopefully you guys have lots of anniversaries to do. That's actually all that I have to say. Thank you so much for listening to me.